Greetings. You are listening to the Northeast Ohio AFSC Weekly Audio Podcast. I'm Greg Coleridge. As always, we hope this podcast informs you about issues you feel are important but not hearing elsewhere, updates you about past and upcoming AFSC plans and activities, and inspires you to take action. It is, after all, grassroots social movements made up of well-informed, prepared, and motivated people that create real change. Well, it is Friday, May 22nd, and as always, we begin with a report of our activities from last week, which was a very busy one, beginning last, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with me attending a conference called the Second National Labor Fightback Conference that took place at Rutgers University in New Jersey. I participated and facilitated a workshop on anti-intervention and moving the money, budget priorities, good gathering, and was one of eight different workshops that took place that brought together, there were probably maybe close to 80, 90 people at this conference, a very good mixture between labor and community, representing everything from healthcare advocates to immigration, peace group representatives, those interested in issues of a variety of economic justice, trade concerns, very widespread. There were representatives from the Black Lives Matter movement, and it was just a very good interchange between people who integrated and dissected their respective individual concerns, but more importantly, looked at the connections, not just issue-wise, but solidarity-wise, of how labor and union representatives could support community concerns and vice versa, since there is a growing reality that these two collective groupings really do need one another to bring about any significant change. So that was the Second National Labor Fightback Conference, details of which can be found by going to their website, laborfightback.org, laborfightback.org. On the same day of the conference, one of the days anyway, Saturday the 16th, was the Cleveland Move to Amend kickoff campaign, where people came together, got petitions, which the petition drive was launched on that Saturday at Cleveland Friends meeting. People secured their initiative petitions and fanned out across University Circle, including Hessler Street Fair, where Move to Amend Cleveland had a table for both Saturday and Sunday. And at that event, as well as others across University Circle, petitioners collected for the 2 days upwards of roughly 500 signatures. 5,000 valid signatures are needed to get a Move to Amend initiative on the ballot, and that would call, of course, on Congress to pass an amendment to the Constitution declaring that corporations are not people and money is not speech. So a very good start in a very short time, though that was a very unique period with a big event like Hessler, but there are efforts underway now to get individuals to participate in neighborhood festivals as well as ethnic festivals throughout this summer, beginning actually Memorial Day weekend. So if you would like more information, a petition yourself, you don't have to be a resident of Cleveland to circulate, just a registered voter, and would like to help the cause, contact Lois Romanoff at 216-231-2170. That's 216-231-2170. She can get to you a petition, petition materials, how-to petition instructions, as well as some talking points, and we can and she can let you know about upcoming events taking place, or just simply encouraging you to petition among your friends and neighbors if they live within the city of Cleveland. So that was Saturday the 16th. Monday the 18th, the City of Lorain City Council passed a Move to Amend resolution. 10-1. This called for the city of Lorain, city council anyway, to call on Congress to pass a move to amend initiative. So it was a good effort on their part that comes after a presentation made to a local union a few weeks back in Lorain, and individuals were very supportive, one of whom happened to have been Rick Lucenti, a city council person in Lorain. So he took the leadership in introducing language and a specific resolution that received overwhelming support. The 19th, this past Tuesday, there was a shareholders meeting, annual, of First Energy Corporation that took place at the John S. Knight Center in Akron. A gathering of maybe about 100 people came together from largely the Akron and Cleveland areas, a few others from elsewhere, Youngstown, Warren, one or two other areas where First Energy has very dirty coal-fired power plants that First Energy is trying very much through political lobbying and campaign contributions and other political arm twisting to try to get we taxpayers to subsidize. So that was certainly a big issue at that meeting. Outside of that meeting, that activists and concerned citizens who are increasingly having to pay higher utility bills to cover these extremely dirty and highly inefficient, and certainly if it was a free market, would not be able to exist. Yet in this controlled market that First Energy would love to maintain and be bailed out with corporate welfare, would love to see us as taxpayers in this monopoly, really controlled monopoly, bail them out. So there's a strong effort to try to increase awareness and put pressure on the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio not to allow that to happen. That next hearing is going to be taking place in June in Columbus. This was just kind of a stepping stone to raise awareness outside of their shareholder meeting, since, of course, investors show up to that. And there were a number of, shareholder resolutions that were presented along these lines. So that was Tuesday the 19th. It took place early in the morning in Akron at the First Energy outside of their shareholders meeting. In the evening was the monthly meeting of the board of Radio Free Akron. We are, you know, it's sometimes hopeful, it's sometimes depressing to kind of be a part of this, but this was a very hopeful meeting. We are, I think, well on the road now. We have about 2 months, 3 months left. We have to be on the air by August 1, but things are coming together, and Radio Free Akron, WMVU, we are many voices united, which will be on 96.9 on your FM dial if you live in the city of Akron or just north of the better parts of Cuyahoga Falls. You will be able to listen to. So watch for that if you want to support that and help out, have your own programming or financially support. We're still about a couple grand we need in dollars. So if you can help out the cause, we could certainly use the help. You can send a check made out to Radio Free Akron, send it to AFSC at our office here in Cuyahoga Falls, 2101 Front Street, number 111, Cuyahoga Falls, 44221, or just give our office a call, 330-928-2301, and we can give you more details. But that would certainly be a way to support this effort, Radio Free Akron, that looks like now it is definitely going to happen. Thursday, Wednesday evening, was the monthly meeting of the PARMA Move to Amend. Plans are well on the way. In fact, at the next meeting, we talked about at Wednesday's meeting to have a large June meeting, which looks like it's going to take place at least tentatively on June 17th, where the president of the PARMA City Council, Sean Brennan, will attend, talk about money and politics, corporate power from a PARMA perspective. And we hope to, and PARMA attendees hope to raise the issue with him and his colleagues of placing a Move to Amend initiative on the ballot in 2016. That's the hope for anyway, so more details when that specific meeting is finalized, but tentatively looking at the 17th, or maybe the next week, maybe the 20, 2nd, 23rd, somewhere in that vicinity, the Tuesday and the Wednesday. I think that's kind of the first preference, the Tuesday or Wednesday of that week. But more details specific later when they are finalized. Finally, last evening, in fact, was the kickoff campaign in South Euclid, formal kickoff campaign to their Move to Amend Citizen Initiative. Their goal is to get on the ballot this year in November of 2015. They need about 1,000 good signatures by early July, so South Euclid Move to Amend activists really do need to hustle. It was a good kickoff, and people are well on their way. If, again, you don't have to be a South Euclid resident to circulate. If you're interested, you can give our office a call. We can put you in touch with folks in South Euclid to get a petition to you and instructions as well as places to petition. Well, so it was a very busy week, a full week, and a good week. Turning now to upcoming planned activities for next week. Beginning tomorrow, May 23rd, not so much in Northeast Ohio, but I will be speaking at a major conference out in Iowa that the Iowa Office of AFSC and Move to Amend and a number of other organizations in Iowa are endorsing, called Governing Under the Influence. Governing Under the Influence is actually a national campaign that AFSC has embarked upon to try to raise the issues of corporate influence on a range of issues associated with several major public policies. This coincides with, in particular, AFSC is focusing on this campaign, this education and advocacy campaign in New Hampshire and in Iowa, two states that, of course, early on are extremely important in the presidential selection process, where there are ample opportunities to press the flesh with presidential candidates and raise significant issues, where these events are not staged, not contrived, not media-driven, but really candidate-driven, where they are engaging directly with prospective voters. So there are scores of candidates running around both states, and in this event, the goal is to educate individuals who themselves will go out and bird dog candidates who will be and have been running around Iowa to raise issues. So I will be giving actually two presentations, sort of the initial keynote, I guess, one could say, on the topic of corporations are not people and money is not speech, a path toward real democracy. And then later in the day, a presentation on increasing jobs and ending debt by preventing banks from creating money out of thin air. The conference itself runs from 10 to 4, and it is in Iowa City, Iowa, where University of Iowa is located. Just FYI, if you want more information, you go to our website, afsc.org/Akron, for details of that event. On the 26th, Tuesday of next week, is the monthly meeting of Akron Time Bank. That will begin at 6:30 p.m. at Market Fresh in the new Portage Crossing Shopping Center, 2687 State Road in Cuyahoga Falls. All Akron Time Bank members are invited to attend, and you're encouraged to bring your ideas and ways to spread the word about the Time Bank. Next Thursday, the 28th, is the monthly AFSC monthly, what we call conference call conversation. It's a monthly conference call where we have a quote-unquote expert talk for 15 or 20 minutes about an issue that we think is important, that we work on, that we hope our constituents and people who are on our mailing lists and the like are interested in and can participate in, not just hearing and listening, but engaging, asking questions, making comments. So the topic this month is entitled Using the Public Power to Create Money to Create Jobs, Repair Infrastructure, and Reduce Debt. Now, the speaker is a guy named Joe Bongiovanni, who is co-director of the National Kettle Pond Institute. He is a second-generation monetary reformer, and he is an annual speaker at the American Monetary Institute's National Conference that takes place every year. Joe is a very unique guy in that he has, I believe, a real unique ability to simplify the complex issues of how money's created, how it's been hijacked by banking corporations, and how it can be democratized to promote justice and prosperity, and in particular, how money can be created by the public, by those we elect to actually repair our nation's crumbling infrastructure, which has been certainly very much in the news recently, given the disaster that took place with the Amtrak train a few weeks ago, and other just issues in the news related to our nation's crumbling roads, bridges, dams, sewers, water lines, sewer lines, and the like. But it's also a way, by creating public money, to create millions of jobs doing all of that, repairing our physical infrastructure, as well as our human infrastructure, education, and healthcare. And it is as well a means of reducing debt. By creating U.S. money, it means you don't have to borrow money created out of thin air by banks, which means you have to pay back with interest every time you borrow money. We don't have to do that. We certainly can get away from that kind of financial dependence by becoming monetarily independent. So Joe's going to speak to that and then take your comments and calls. That's going to be from 7 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, May 28th. If interested, you can call in 857-232-0155. That's 857-232-0155. And the access code is 744-213. That's 744-213. Details and that conference call and access number are also on our webpage as well as Facebook page. So join us. That's next Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. Well, we turn now to some brief comments on current issues that our program works on or follows. Beginning first with, as seemingly every week, we are providing commentary on the issue of Fast Track. That vote, so far, has yet not been taken in the Senate. There is still debate going on. And the commentary this week is about the relationship between Fast Track and the TPP. There is a somewhat mistaken impression that Fast Track and the TPP are basically one and the same, but they aren't. Fast Track, as we've mentioned before, is the set of terms or rules governing how Congress can discuss, debate, and decide the actual TPP, so-called trade agreement, which we often discussed. Those terms include, in essence, limiting duration for the debate, limiting the debate itself in Congress, and, of course, the provision that once this TPP is presented before Congress, that there are no amendments. What needs to be underscored, however, is that these terms not only apply to the TPP, but will apply to all so-called trade deals that come before Congress while Fast Track is in effect. And this is likely to be several years. And so lining up like, I don't know, backed up airplanes at O'Hare Airport in Chicago are a number of international agreements, not just Fast Track. They're first in line to take off, which we hope doesn't happen. But they're not only the only deals that are on the runway. Just behind it, if the TPP passes, is this Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP, which we've mentioned before in previous weeks. It's, if you will, the European equivalent of the TPP in terms of addressing not just trade issues, but issues of worker, consumer, and environmental laws and regulations that transnational corporations don't see as laws and regulations that are democratically enacted that protect workers, consumers, and environment, but rather as barriers for them to maximize profit, and that therefore they want to gut. So that's the TTIP that maybe you've heard a little about, if for no other reason than we've mentioned it in previous podcasts. But there's another agreement out there that maybe you've not heard of that you need to know about. It's called the Trade in Services Agreement, or TISA. I don't know if it's pronounced TISA or TISA. We'll call it TISA. Well, TISA is a treaty between 24 parties, including the U.S. and the European Union. It totals of about, in total, 50 countries that combined make up about 68% of the world's trade in services. TISA aims to, as they say, quote-unquote, liberalize the trade in services, which is a sanitized word for abolishing, or gutting them so much that there basically isn't anything left. The specific services that TISA would include are banking, healthcare, and transport, among others. Like the TPP, TISA has been negotiated in secret. WikiLeaks last year released a classified draft of the financial services portion of the agreement. And part of the statement that they released, WikiLeaks that is, along with the agreement, is this statement from their press release. Quote, "The draft financial services annex sets rules which would assist the expansion of financial multinationals, mainly headquartered in New York, London, Paris, and Frankfurt, into other nations by preventing regulatory barriers." The leaked draft also shows that the U.S. is particularly keen on boosting cross-border data flow, which would allow uninhibited exchange of personal and financial data, unquote. Well, additionally, the current draft also includes language, this is TISA, inferring that upon the finishing of negotiations, the document itself will be kept classified for 5 full years. So not only is this TISA being negotiated right now in secret, but even if it comes to pass, even if it passes, even if it goes into force, it details of which won't be made public for another 5 years. How in the world is that democratic? And what does that say about how legit that agreement is when not only would it not be made public after it's approved, but it has to be sat on for 5 years? Well, despite the complete failure of sufficient financial regulations to prevent the 2007 and 2008 global financial collapse, TISA proposes even less financial regulation and would have the power to trump existing national financial regulations. It would be an immense aid to the too-big-to-fail banking corporations, which is why the banking industry, which is already the number one industry that politically contributes or donates to federal elected officials, wants it. Public pension funds, for example, could be challenged as quote-unquote monopolies. Efforts to regulate casino-like financial derivatives could be challenged as quote-unquote a financial barrier or financial barriers. So fast track, it's important to know and important to remind ourselves that fast track is more than just the TPP. While the TPP is bad enough, in some ways, specifically related to banking corporations, TISA may actually be worse. Yet fast track, if Congress approves it, would permit all international agreements dealing with trade to be railroaded or steamrolled through Congress with little discussion or debate and no amendments. TISA is another reason to call your congressional representatives. It's another reason to bring up to them why they should oppose fast track. So if you're looking for another excuse, another reason, another way and avenue or justification for calling your representatives, this is it. It's TISA. Call your congressperson. Call your senators. Let them know that this also is something that could come to fore if fast track is approved. Well, a second story related to TPP this week can be titled, I guess, Be Careful What You Ask For, because a provision has been slipped into the TPP this country that would extend and increase the government's Trade Adjustment Assistance Program, which provides assistance to workers who lose their jobs because of trade deals. The measure, which was introduced by Representative Dave Reichert, a Republican from Washington, proposes covering some of the $2.7 billion in cost of the extension by slicing $700 million out of doctor and hospital reimbursements for Medicare. Democrats opposed to the TPP have been calling for trade adjustment assistance to be included in a package that contains the TPP. Republicans are calling their bluff. If you want more money for the trade adjustment assistance to help workers, they're saying, then you must cut Medicare. Well, this political jockeying, which Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown has been involved in, is helpful to the extent of it is a way to try to stall and slow down the momentum of Fast Track, which, of course, would open the door not just to the TPP, but for all these other agreements. And by slowing it down, it is hoped by Senator Brown and others who are introducing these amendments to be a part of Fast Track and a part of TPP, which includes this trade adjustment assistance and others. Sherrod Brown, for example, has been very interested in having attached to the TPP something related to currency manipulation that China and other countries have been engaged in. All of this is designed to try to slow down the momentum in the Senate and to get people to pay attention so that even if the TPP prevails in the Senate, even if Fast Track is approved and the TPP is approved in the Senate, which, you know, truth be told, is probably likely, given the numbers and given the lobbying efforts and the arm twisting and the backroom deals that the Obama administration is engaged in with senators, that nevertheless, efforts to hold up the final vote provides opportunities for the public and the media to learn more about the TPP and hopefully become more outraged and hopefully become more activated to oppose it. So we need to take advantage of this opportunity to continue to share news about it and to oppose it. Well, a third issue this week, announced this week by the Justice Department, was a plea by five huge banking corporations of guilt to market manipulation, while also agreeing to pay $5.8 billion in fines. The five banks in question are Barclays, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, and the Royal Bank of Scotland. Those are four of the five, and those four admitted as part of this deal announced by the Justice Department this week to illegally distorting foreign exchange markets. The banks formed what they called a cartel, which is never a good thing, and they admitted to that this cartel aimed to set a key currency marker known as the fix that would mutually benefit the values of all of them. A fifth bank, UBS Corporation, pleaded guilty to manipulating a different market. So what's behind this deal? Why did the government act now when it has done basically nothing since 2007-2008 over reining in banking abuses? And why would the banks themselves admit to guilt? Well, from the government standpoint, coming down hard on the banking corporations certainly takes heat off of the administration that it has done nothing or little to rein in the too big to bank fails from financial abuses. From the banking corporation standpoint, while they probably didn't want to admit guilt or pay anywhere near $6 billion in fines, it's nevertheless a, so to speak, fine compromise. Since no bankers are being indicted, no bankers are going to go to jail, and the fines themselves are actually, relatively speaking, certainly those that banking corporations can deal with. For example, J.P. Morgan incurred a fine under this agreement of $550 million. By comparison, their net income last year was $21.8 billion. So was the relatively small fine and avoidance of jail time enough of a deterrence to commit similar crimes in the future? Time will tell, but I doubt it if history is any indication. The only way there's going to be true ending of these crimes, financial and otherwise, is for we the people to step up and organize and become better educated and put tremendously more greater pressure on our public officials, as well as trying to change, you know, the basic fundamental rules of the game. Because this kind of nonsense, this sort of action, or, you know, in this case, overtime inaction against banking companies, and even when they do act, only coming up with, relatively speaking, minor fines and appearances of coming down hard, but still, in the end, not doing so, is going to continue until we change the rules of the game that define corporations as people and money as speech, which until we do that, banking corporations are going to continue to possess the lobbying clout and the campaign contribution or investment clout that buys, rents, leases, and retains public officials to our detriment. Well, lastly, last piece to comment on has to do more locally with the resignation of Don Pluskowic. The 28-year regime of Akron Mayor Don Pluskowic is coming to an end. Pluskowic suddenly announced his resignation a few weeks ago in response to supposedly a single sentence from an editorial in the Akron Beacon Journal, the city's hometown newspaper, which over the mayor's tenure has supported his policies, you know, I don't know exactly what percentage of the time, but incredibly overwhelming, 90%, maybe it's more, maybe it's slightly less, but much more of the time than not, they have been cheerleaders to the mayor's policies. Pluskowic's politics of intimidation, bluster, and threats will soon end. His public claim that he feared a city council person was going to assassinate him in front of his mother marked probably the end to any doubt that Pluskowic could any more be taken seriously. We have certainly had our run-ins with the mayor, to say the least, over issues over many years of campaign finance reform, both in its passage and its implementation, as well as the mayor's attempt to corporatize Akron's sewer system. His policies have certainly not been all negative. However, his decision years ago to let millions, if not tens of millions of dollars, sit on the table to address the city's combined water sewer system have resulted in delays and now additional costs in excess of $1 billion that will have to be absorbed 100% by already struggling ratepayers. This disastrous decision alone to the average Akron homeowner should offset whatever positives they feel they have incurred from any other policies or practices or laws or programs that he has initiated. Akron faces a future of economic troubles. Not all of them by any means is the mayor's fault or Akron's fault. In this increasingly globalized world, corporate decisions, particularly from transnational corporations, and public decisions at the state and federal level have made Akron public officials victims to many circumstances beyond their control. Many are hailing the May 31st last day of Pluskowic as mayor as a relief and as an opportunity to reset the tone between the mayor's office and city council and between the city and citizens. They should. I certainly am. However, we need to be clear that the departure of Pluskowic does not mean the departure of several rooted realities that prevent citizens from authentically being heard to have their needs met and neighborhoods helped. These continuing political, economic, and cultural realities include, number one, a weak city council. The city charter is tilted toward a strong mayor, whoever sits in that seat, without adequate resources by council for independent research and legal assistance, it's difficult for council to legitimately provide the necessary checks and balances to make sure that the mayor, whoever that person may be, doesn't get away with whatever he or she wants to do. Second, the Akron Beacon Journal. The hometown newspaper's virtual uniform cheerleading of the mayor's policies over the years, if not decades, blinded it to the growing debt of the city and colossal mistakes that the city has never owned up to. Hometown papers in this age across the country, but particularly in struggling cities, especially in the industrial Midwest, seem to feel that they have an added responsibility, that of city booster. The Beacon has certainly filled that role well, but at the detriment of objective reporting. Investigative reporting has become non-existent. The independence from the political and business community just doesn't exist. It's hard to believe this will change anytime soon. I hope it does, but if history is any indication, at least over the mayor's tenure, then it's not very hopeful. However, we can hope for the best, but not necessarily expect it. Third, the city debt. The growing debt of the city provides a huge obstacle to meeting the city's felt needs, be it to the city's people or to the infrastructure. This is a serious financial noose that the next mayor and council will have to increasingly pay attention to. And finally, the city's economic elite is a continuing reality that has to be owned up to. The mayor's political power came in large part to his ability to collect cash for his political campaigns and political action committees. Those he opposed, he politically went after, donating or investing in their opponents. Causes he supported or opposed were likewise backed up with cash from Akron's richest corporate leaders and corporate entities themselves. None of these have gone away, though several of Akron's richest corporate leaders are no longer in place. They've been replaced with others that are just as committed to seeing Akron's political and economic status quo remain. This is a reality that in no time, in the near future anyway, is likely to change. So such are the realities. Changing political faces can be refreshing. They can lead sometimes to changed laws and regulations. And I suspect in some important ways that will happen. But by themselves, they don't change the political ground rules. Only well-educated and organized social movements addressing not only economic issues, but political power can change that. So to the extent that Akron citizens can come together and address fundamental issues around political power is what needs to happen. Well, that's all for this week. Keep up with our activities. Contact us with questions, concerns, or willingness to help out. Our website is afsc.org/Akron. Facebook page is facebook.com/NEOAFSC. Our program blog is northeastohioafsc.wordpress.com. My blog, createrealdemocracy.wordpress.com. Until next week, onward for justice, peace, and democracy.